This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us as always. A little bit later in the program, a couple of nice two-year-old stakes down at Laurel. So I reached out to Dave Rodman. We'll have him on towards the latter half of the hour and talk about the two-year-old stakes. It's that time of year where you focus on the two-year-olds and start to get in the Triple Crown mode as we are past the Breeders' Cup and still some great racing left in the year. But those two-year-olds always take a lot of focus about this time and in the first couple of months of the year as we start to parse out who may be the attention as we get into Triple Crown season next year. Also, I have a little news and notes segment coming up. Cartier Awards in Europe crowned the top European runner, so we'll talk about that. That was earlier this week. Top of the show, however, reached out to my friend Bob Ehalt. He is the senior writer at the Blood Horse, also a contributor at America's Best Racing, their website, and going to talk about some of his articles on both of those locations. Bob, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. Pleasure to be with you.
I wanted to start out, Bob, because I saw you had an article on the America's Best Racing website, and that's really why I reached out to you. It's about speed figures, and just kind of, I would consider it a primer of speed figures. You kind of went down the list of the past performance providers that offer speed figures and talked a little bit about the differences amongst them, and I thought it would be interesting for folks new to the game, we could introduce them to speed figures, but if they've been around for a while, they may have their favorite. I'm a buyer's guy, but may want to think about looking in a different direction. So I thought we'd touch on that article. And again, it's on the America's Best Racing website if you'd like to read it. But let's just start out. And for folks that, who I say may be new, I come from the day, and I'm sure you do as well, where kind of at the end of the PPs, there would be the, you know, the speed figure and the track variant, that has disappeared, and now speed figures themselves have come into the fore, which I much prefer. But just talk a little bit in overview what speed figures are all about.
Well, a speed figure is a number assigned to that the horse got for its, it generalizes its performance. And it's, the speed figures have become standardized so that you can take horses who run at different distances, different surfaces, and you get one number that relates to it. Like, it will solve a problem for you of, let's say, a horse who runs in a mile race, runs the race in 1:38. Okay, you have a horse in a six-furlong sprint who goes 1:12. Well, which is faster? Well, that's what the speed figure will tell you. Speed figure will tell you which performance is better. Like in that particular instance, if you're using buyer numbers, those numbers actually are going to get the same buyer speed figure. Generally, their base might be a 94 for that performance. And then where the speed figures kick in is how they are constructed, because the essence of them is to take, when you look at that horse, say, who ran 1:38. How good was that individual performance? So what you basically do is they do create a table of pars for each class. Say in a maiden race, a horse might be expected to run a mile in, let's just say, 1:38.3 Well, when your horse did 1:38, how good was that performance? Was that better than expected? Was it equal to expectations or lesser? how you judge that is by judging all of the races on the card and seeing how those horses compare to the pars for their race. You kind of do all the math. You try to keep apples to apples, oranges to oranges. You don't use perf numbers to explain dirt numbers. You try to avoid the sprints and the routes because they are different in terms of the numbers on occasion. And you produce what you feel a par for that day is, and then the pars kind of say whether that performance was good, fast, or, you know, typical.
And I referred to, you know, back in the day, there was that number, and the 100 would have been tied a track record. Better than 100 would have been more than the track record, less than, and each point was a fifth of a second. And then there was the track variant. So folks could kind of figure for themselves, but it wasn't quite the same. And that track variant, I think, for lay people was hard to maybe figure out a little bit sometimes, whereas speed figures take that kind of thing into account. And that's why, you know, there is art and there is science, and they look at the figures can change during the day. Their interpretation of the figures can change. So they're looking at the track and the way it plays, not just day to day, but in a particular day as the day goes along.
Sure, they're looking. You know, part of the key with the people who compile the speed figures are that they are not just going to hold to a rigid rule. There are times, like you say, a track can change in the middle of the card. You could get rain come out. Like, you know, at Saratoga, we know where that rain could come from. And what might be a good speed figure in the first race is not, you can't really then maybe sometimes compare it to what goes on in the fifth race. So what the speed figure is doing is the better providers have better handles on adjusting to those kind of little variants that happen from day to day and are able to give you, still maintain a reliable figure, even though the track may change. They don't just hold themselves to the simple mathematics of, say, nine races, divide all the pluses and minuses, and there's your figure. Sometimes, like I said, they will try to keep apples to apples and oranges to oranges. And that's certainly, you know, in a sense, that's why what you pay them for, because most of the speed figures you are paying for it through one way or the other. Like, you know, if you buy a daily racing form, it's a little bit expensive these days. But you're getting that info. Same thing from some of these providers, maybe where you go online, where you have to pay for them through one way or another, either directly or sometimes some of these services are tied to handicapping, wagering outlets where they give you free PP. But you do have to bet with them. So one way or the other, there is a price associated with it.
And I'll ask if you agree. I say it a lot of the time when I've been doing the handicapping show. I am a buyer's guy. They are a big factor in my handicapping, but I always say it's just a tool. You can't rely. You can't necessarily look at it. It'll work out sometimes, but it's not a go-to every race, certainly. Oh, the best last race buyer figure or the best lifetime buyer figure. It has to be figured into your whole handicapping package. It can be, like for me, an important tool, but it's just one of the tools in the toolbox.
Yeah, no, that's totally correct. You can't, I mean, one of the great, sometimes, I think one of the key parts that's emphasized more in some of the premium speed figures, like the Theragraph and the Ragazin, which actually kind of invented that model, which puts more factors into their speed figure than, say, some of the others. But the key part, I think, in any kind of handicapping is getting away from the thought of, just because a horse did something in its last race, it's going to do something in its next race. The key part I learned, I spent for maybe about 10 years with part-time work for the Thoroughbred Times doing their Ragazin analysis piece, where I would talk to Len Friedman, one of the founding fathers of the sheets, where we would analyze races, and kind of my job was to take what he had to say about the figures and me turn it into English so that people could understand it. And, you know, the key part with that was the pattern of understanding, as I say, whether a horse is going to improve, regress, or duplicate that number. And that's something, as I say, that mentality is tied to the sheets and other things, the Ragazin sheets. But I think it's important, even if you use the buyers, don't just buy into one number. Look at the horse's pattern to see if it's logical that the horse is going to repeat it or even go forward. try to see. I mean, sometimes horses put in good performances out of nowhere. Sometimes they get sucked into a good time. So you want to know that, you know, was this maybe too exhausting an effort for a horse? Was it just too unusual? And that, I think, helps you because certainly if you look at them as just numbers that you think a horse is going to replicate for sure, you're really not going to be that successful even with those kind of tools.
And that's a great point. And that's something you learn over time the longer you handicap, not just looking at the single numbers, but looking at them as a pattern. Is maybe
right.
This horse moving forward in a form cycle? Was that great race last time an aberration? Because the number will kind of point that out as well. Let's hit on some of the specifics, because you list, again, a number of the products you've already mentioned, and we've been showing some shots here, and we have a shot of the buyer figures, again, from the Daily Racing Form, which I think most people are familiar with. And you also mentioned the Equibase figures and the Brisnet figures. I would put them all kind of in the same category. They're maybe slightly different as far as the scale. The, you know,
right.
a 105 buyer may be a little bit different interpreted by Equibase or Brisnet, but I think those three past performance speed figures, DRF, Equibase, and Brisnet, fairly similar.
They are. They are very similar. You know, It's not, shall we say, a pure science. It's an interpretation. Everybody has their thoughts on the pars. Everybody has their thoughts. So the numbers, you're not going to get the same numbers. A lot of times they just use different scales. But, you know, you're getting a different take. And it also happens track to track. At some tracks, a certain service has a guy who's really dialed in and he knows how to put the numbers for that circuit. And then at other circuits, maybe it's, you know, a little bit more haphazard. I think there's trial and error. Those are generally the ones you mentioned. They're very similar. They're also similarly priced. When you want to, when you're, say, betting more than $2 a race and you want to spend the extra money to go get the Ragazin Thoroughgraph, you're going to get, though, a little bit more factored in. Like those services, I think what makes them worthwhile the money if you're putting, if you're having a decent-sized bankroll, they're adding ground loss, which is a very important factor, into that figure. You know, what the buyers don't take into account is just, let's say, one horse hugs the rail the entire trip. The other guy gets taken 6-7 wide, and he loses a nose. Well, with the buyers, they get the same figure, basically. On the Ragazin Thoroughgraph, they will take that ground loss into account, and the horse who lost could conceivably get a better figure than the horse that beat it. That's the one difference with those accounts. They also take weight into the issue. Like if a horse carried a lot of weight in that performance, it will impress them more as opposed to, say, you got away with lightweight, which maybe, you know, which would indicate that, well, you weren't as active as the other horse. So those are kind of the differences between what I would say the premium services at a higher cost, which could be $25 or $35 for the card, as opposed to paying online $2 or $3 for a card.
And we're showing a shot of Ragazin numbers there, which have numbers and symbols. And a Thoroughgraph, we have a shot of a Thoroughgraph page as well, which obviously far more complex than looking at a quick buyer number. But I will say, over the past couple of summers up at Saratoga, when I've had trainers back with me and interviewing trainers, from the guy with a small stable up to the big guys we're all familiar with, I've asked them over the past couple of years if they used numbers in their training. And virtually all of them have said yes. And I said, well, what do you use? And virtually all of them say either Ragazin or Thoroughgraph or a combination of the two. So it is a more expensive product, but as you say, it's more complex. And if people want to give those kind of a things a shot, they may find it to be as beneficial as some of the trainers do.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, in particular, I could use Chad Brown as a complete devotee of the sheets for Ragazin, and it was kind of funny. One of the first times I interviewed Chad, we were talking, and you know, the interview was going along okay, and then looked down at my media card, saw my name, and said, wait, did you used to write the Ragazin pieces for Thoroughbred Times?
Nice.
And I said, yeah, and his face lit up. He said, oh, And it was like, I read those all the time with Bobby Frankel. We would go back. And I've always had a great association with Chad because he'll talk numbers to me because kind of what I was fortunate enough to learn from Led Freeman about the patterns. That's what a lot of these trainers do. A lot of their decision on spots and when to run the horses are based on what they see largely by the sheet.
And again, as a handicapper, you can use that same kind of advantage. Those are a little more expensive. And again, your article gives websites where folks can visit. Rag is in. It's www.thesheets.com. Thoroughgraph, www.thoroughgraph.com. One other that we haven't mentioned is fairly new on the scene, but I like the way you described it because I was going to say essentially the same thing, but in a little bit of a different way. Timeform, you label it as an eye-pleasing online product. And I was going to say, this is a little more of a visual kind of a thing with a lot of color coding involved. And as I say, Timeform, fairly new on the scene.
Yeah, Timeform, I think, is something that a lot of the younger people who are a little bit more, you know, who kind of grew up online can look at. Certainly, they have some things that the others don't have, like a pace projector and things like that, which could really help you. And I think, you know, for those who have tablets, computer savvy, you know, I think it's kind of a more fulfilling experience for them in being able to project what's going to happen in a race. Again, they use their own estimation on how fast the horse really ran. Like when it went 45-4 for the opening quarter, was that a fast quarter or was that a slow quarter? And they, again, use those projections. And sometimes I think they do a little bit more of the work for you because of that. So that's kind of like I'm kind of a little more old-fashioned. I don't mind kind of using my own knowledge. But for people new to the game, it is important. I think that those kind of sites are helpful. And, you know, and even some of the services, Thoroughgraph in particular, like you mentioned with the two-year-olds and even horses at first time starts, Thoroughgraph does, aside from that number, do give you stats, which come in helpful for first-time starters because, in a sense, the buyers and the rags and numbers, if a horse hasn't run, they can't tell you anything.
And I'll toss out one other note that you make that is worth throwing out there for people who may be so inclined. You mentioned folks can make their own figures. And I know I run into people up at Saratoga all the time. It takes time, and you have to be dedicated. Guys who do it professionally, guys like Paul Matisse and his brother Duke, certainly do their own numbers, and it's very successful for them. So if somebody has that in the back of their mind, there are books out there and folks that they can talk to, people can make their own numbers.
I used to do that a lot on my own, but, you know, because I did read Andy Byers' book and was really impressed with it, and you know, I did for a long time do my own numbers. What kind of got me out of it was fatherhood, where when I was a single guy, I had the time, because it does take time. It's not a very simple process. You do have to kind of get the charts, read the races, make your own interpretations, and compile it, keep a book, do all this stuff. So when I was a single guy, it was a little bit easier when the pressures of child fatherhood came into play. It was sort of like, well, you know what? Maybe it's a little better if I pay a little bit more and let the Daily Racing Corps do the figures for me.
And again, that's an option certainly for folks, but if, like you, they don't have the time, there are plenty of other options out there and opportunities to find them. As they say, your article is on the America's Best Racing website talking about the speed figures, and you give the websites that people can visit to pull up all those various products. And it's worth the kind of, if you're locked into one, it's worth, I've shopped around and days up at Saratoga, pulled up some Thoroughgraph sheets or other products and played around with them a little bit. And it's worth kind of taking a look around and seeing if there's something out there that may be more beneficial to you. Bob, let's also shift tracks. Again, you contributed to ABR, and that article was on America's Best Racing, but you're a senior writer for Blood Horse and did a lot of coverage a couple of weeks ago out at the Breeders' Cup, and we're still close enough. Like to get a little recap info. We're going to watch the stretch run here while we talk of the Breeders' Cup Classic, number 10, Vina Rosso, over number 8, McKenzie. I went with McKenzie. I had these two flip-flopped in my picks. I thought McKenzie was, I thought he was the best older horse in the country, and it just unlucky maybe to be second as many times as he was, but he's stuck in that bridesmaid role this year. Vino Rosso kind of redemption after what happened in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, but a first Breeders' Cup Classic for Todd Pletcher, Mike Rapoli part of the team as well, Vinny Viola. So a New York team takes the Breeders' Cup Classic. What were your thoughts after the big race?
Well, I thought it worked out. Of course, it's kind of, to be frank, I was the opposite of you. I did have Vino Rosso over McKenzie. My question with McKenzie was, does he want to go the mile and a quarter? That was the thought. I thought Vino Rosso really was going to be, you know, the horse that had the best chance of running a good race at a mile and a quarter. They made a very wise decision earlier in the year to go out Santa Anita with Vino Rosso. They won the Gold Cup at Santa Anita at a mile and a quarter over that racetrack. It gave him the experience. I think that was a racetrack a lot of horses, some horses like, a lot maybe did. You know, it was a deep tiring track. I thought Irad Ortiz really gave him a great ride because he moved him at the right time. On that track, you were not going to win races in the stretch. You're going to win races either on the lead or on the turn. And he moved him at the right time. And I think it was just everything worked into the conditions. And I think that's what you might have seen with Code of Honor, who tried to close a little later and just really got caught in a treadmill there. But Vino Rosso, certainly, I mean, it's a shame. He is heading to stud, you know, at a time when I think he really has reached his peak. I mean, I think the only real problem he had was I don't think he's a horse who likes Saratoga. The connection kind of felt they were thinking about the Woodward and then said, no, we don't think he likes this track. It turned out to be a good move. And it's a shame he won't be around next year. McKenzie will be, and it'll be interesting to see if maybe with a little bit more age and Bob getting a little more time to work with him, will he turn into that mile and a quarter? You know, will that mile and a quarter be within his scope when he races perhaps maybe in something like the Dubai World Cup or next year's Classic?
And also you had a nice summation and where some of the horses are going after the Breeders' Cup, you know, either going to the breeding shed or going on. And, man, this Saudi Cup, this brand-new race, $20 million race, you had quotes from the connections and McKenzie, maybe Saudi Cup. I was going to laugh that Bob Baffert said, I think the January 25th Pegasus comes up a little quick. That's where we are in the 21st century. But he's looking at maybe the Dubai Saudi Cup, and then he would stick around for the Dubai Cup. But interestingly, he may in the Saudi Cup meet Midnight Bijou. That race is shaping up to be very, very intriguing.
It really is. I mean, I'm surprised. I thought Horseman might be a little skeptical. You know, it is a kind of a new thing. You're going into, like, I think Horseman have, you know, warmed to the idea of Dubai. Now you're going to a different country, a different setting. But, you know, let's face it, it's $20 million without the enormous buy-in of the Pegasus. It's a mile and an eighth, which is, I think, why Midnight Pursuit and McKenzie in particular are looking at it. You know, $20 million, I mean, you know, if you win, you're taking home between $10 to $12 million just off that race. If you win that race, you're probably in great shape for the Dubai World Cup, you know, which means how many million can you come home with? You know, you're coming home with maybe close to $18 million in purse winnings off those two races. So, you know, or more. It was a little bit surprising to me, but I think, you know, as I say, Midnight Pursuit wants to go. McKenzie wants to go. I think you're going to see some other big names come out there because they certainly, when you put that much money on the table, $20 million, basically running for free, man, you're going to get horses, apparently. And, that makes it interesting. And the timing does sit well with keeping the horse in that part of the world for the Dubai World Cup. So, if you could get Midnight Pursuit and McKenzie to start, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good way to start out the race.
Yeah, no question about it. Like I say, this is turning out to be quite intriguing. It was questionable when it first was announced. How's it going to play out? But, again, $20 million, it's going to attract a lot of attention. Bob, before we let you go, You're a New York guy, but I've been talking to a lot of people over the past couple of weeks about the Breeders' Cup, and it really seems like a consensus. I've never been there. Obviously, this year, Santa Anita had its problems and the unfortunate incident with Mongolian Groom at the end of what was otherwise an incredible couple of days for the Breeders' Cup. But kind of taking some of the problems of Santa Anita out of the equation that they've had this year, and just looking at it as a venue for the Breeders' Cup. As I say, everybody I've talked to over the past couple of weeks, I've never been, but they say great venue for the Breeders' Cup, but also just a great venue in general. Your thoughts of Santa Anita?
I think I do agree with you. I think Santa Anita is a great venue. I mean, when you have the backdrops of those San Gabriel Mountains, I mean, it's almost like you're painting a picture. It is a real beautiful locale for it. The weather is great. In the morning, I'll tell you what, in the morning, it was a little chilly. You needed when you were going out for the morning works at 7 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning, you needed a coat. It wasn't California. The weather got better. But I think that part is, it's a beautiful track, but I do see from the issues that they have, and that has to really be addressed. A lot has to be addressed, I think, with a lot more attention and focus. I'll be honest, I wasn't sure if they should have had it there because of the issues, as you see what happens when they did have a fatality, which in horse races, you know, you can't prevent. No matter what you do, there will be those injuries. But as I say, if we're looking at it aesthetically, yes, it really is it's one of the more beautiful sights in horse racing.
And one of the things a couple of folks I've talked to over the past couple of weeks have mentioned, Clocker's Corner, which is a little bit different than a lot of racetracks. But I guess in the morning, it's kind of the one spot where everybody congregates.
Yeah, it's sort of like, you know, Belmont and Saratoga have their track kitchens, which are, you know, filled in the morning. But they're away from the racing service. Clocker's Corner is kind of at the end of the grandstand there at Santa Anita. So that you could actually get your cup of coffee, and while you're waiting for your sandwich or something, you could watch the horses go by. So it really is a very nice setup. The weather, as I say, it's a little chilly sometimes early in the morning, so you want to get that coffee. It's a nice setup. The one thing, I'll add this, the one thing when people, as much as it's beautiful there at the racetrack, getting around L.A.
Oh, well.
And prices of gas, I'm sorry. I mean, you know, when you go to the gas pump up there in Albany in New York, keep in mind, you're probably going to pay $2 a gallon more in California. So, and the traffic jam, boy, if you think the Northway gets crowded, boy, you got to go on like some of those freeways in California. So that was another part of it that I looked at it. As I said, kind of shook my head at seeing gas prices of like $4.75 a gallon.
Yeah, I suppose that all plays into it, certainly. And that is, as I say, I have a couple of nephews who live in L.A. I got to get out and visit and go to the Santa Anita and get that visit in. But I've never been to the track, but I have read plenty about traveling, you know, by car around the L.A. area, and it does not sound like a pleasant experience. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it makes you more open to the traffic issues we face in the Northeast.
Yeah, you mentioned the Northway, and I kind of, when I drive home at night and I'm going at 30 miles an hour up until we get to about exit 7, I'm always kind of kicking myself. But then you think out there, they're probably going like 5 miles an hour for much, much longer. So it's not as bad as you would think.
Yeah, it's like you see on your GPS, you're 2 miles from the place you're going, and it's a 25-minute drive, you know. It's like... It's not inspiring.
But you have the weather, I guess. So it all balances out somehow.
That somebody said, you know, the problems that they might have with a lot of the problems they have with the racing, with the surface, is tied to the weather because of they did have a freak amount of rain, and it's the way that the track dries is hampered by those Santa Ana winds that they get out there,
right,
which kind of sometimes create havoc with drying the track. But they said they'd rather have that than deal with the ice as they get it aqueduct.
Exactly. Everybody has their pluses and minuses. And, Bob, pluses from you in the Blood Horse and America's Best Racing, great coverage of the Breeders' Cup and beyond in the Blood Horse. And again, I'll tell people to go over and check out that Speed Figure article on America's Best Racing. Bob, as always, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
Thank you, Seth. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Bob Ehalt, and we'll head to a break. When we come back, as noted, we'll do some quick news and notes from the past week, and then a few minutes down the road, Dave Rodman will join us. A couple of nice two-year-old stakes today at Laurel. We'll get some of his thoughts on both of those stakes coming up right after this. Stay tuned.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB. With our newly designed, state-of-the-art mobile wagering site, everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be.
County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Here's some exciting news from Capital OTB. Capital Off-Track Betting and the Rivers Casino have partnered to bring you the finest experience in wagering on all your favorite thoroughbred and harness tracks from right inside the casino. Our newest location is open daily and can be found at Vance Flix Barn, offering live tellers, self-serve betting terminals, racing information kiosks, and all the amenities you come to expect from Capital OTB. See you at the Rivers Casino in Schenectady.
Welcome back to Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. As promised before the break, some news and notes. I mentioned at the top of the show, the Cartier Awards were given out earlier this week, which are the European equivalent of the Eclipse Awards. And the European Horse of the Year, Enable, for the second year in a row. She is the third double winner of the Horse of the Year Award. She joins Frankel and Ouija Board. I bet company, and deservedly so. She is phenomenal. We're going to take a look here at her winning the King George and Queen Elizabeth from earlier this year. She won the Eclipse. She won this King George and Queen Elizabeth. She also won the Yorkshire Oaks before finishing second in the Arc after having taken the lead. And then Waldgeist just got her at the end of that Arc race. But again, nice performance here in the King George and Queen Elizabeth. As you can see, a gutsy victory over Crystal Ocean, and she will get it done. Enable last year came over here, won the Arc last year, came over here and beat the boys in the Breeders' Cup turf. Boy, that's a nice gutsy win there, again, over Crystal Ocean. So last year won the Breeders' Cup turf and then had kind of a delayed start this year, didn't get back to the races until July. But then, as they say, the Eclipse, the King George, the Yorkshire Oaks, three group ones over there, and that was enough to get her a second Horse of the Year honor over in Europe, Cartier Awards. Great night as well for her trainer, John Gosden, training Enable, but also Cartier winners, Too Darn Hot, the three-year-old colt, Starcatcher, the three-year-old filly, and Stradivarius, the stayer. So four Cartier winners for trainer John Gosden. As I say, a very nice night for him. Enable also won the Older Horse Award as well as the Cartier Awards, again, given out beginning of this week. I like the Cartier Awards. I am an Eclipse voter, and Eclipse voters, there are some industry representatives, there's media representatives. But what's nice about the Cartier there's kind of a little bit of subjective and objective. I mean, you know, the Eclipse Awards are a vote that is purely subjective, but there's the objective portion of the Cartier Awards. They earn points through some of the important races during the year. That's 30% of a Cartier award vote or award total. That 30% is combined with 35% from a panel of racing journalists and handicappers. And then another 35% goes to fans who get to vote as well. So it's kind of an interesting racing media, fans, and the actual performances on track get some juice as well. So I kind of like the way they do that over there, the Cartier Awards. And you may question why it's so early if you're not familiar with European racing, as opposed to we essentially wait to the end of the year to do the Eclipse Awards. They in Europe, essentially, there's a flat season and a jump season, certainly in the UK. And the flat season kind of winds up, well, British Champions Day, what was that now, about a month ago, a little less than that, kind of wraps it up over there, the Arc in France. And so there's kind of an end point to the prominent group level flat season, so they can give away those awards without having missed anything, because again, there's still some flat racing that's going on, but it's at a much lesser level, and they concentrate more on the jump side of things for another, 4 months maybe, over the winter season. So again, there is a more definitive end to their prominent group level of flat season. All right, I wanted to go back and take a look at a race from last Sunday. Again, we were in here Sunday morning, but we didn't get a chance to look at this race, obviously, because it was Sunday afternoon. But I mentioned it earlier, this time of year, I always like to pay attention to the two-year-olds, and they had a two-year-old race out in Southern California. These are the two-year-old fillies. Will this be a Kentucky Oaks horse? I don't know, but in the Desi Arnaz last Sunday at Del Mar, the two-year-old fillies went 6.5 furlongs, and Lucathia is in front here, the number four horse, and wins as the 2-5 favorite. 2-5, won like a 2-5. As I say, I'm not sure we have an Oaks horse here. This was 6.5 furlongs, had won a stake just before at 6 furlongs, broken the maiden back in the middle of August at Del Mar at 5.5 furlongs, subsequently went 7 furlongs in the Del Mar debutante, and had a little trouble there, but wound up eighth, a well-beaten eighth. And trying a mile and a 16th in the Chandelier at Santa Anita, bobbled and lost the jockey. So 7 furlongs and a mile and a 16th. The 7 furlongs to me just looks, again, with some trouble, maybe a draw line through that. Clearly a draw line through the race where they lost the jockey. So we'll see with Lucathia what they plan to do. But as they say, a little bit inconsistent overall, went off as a 2-5 favorite, which I think is just a sign of the rest of the field. This one had an edge there. And so what is the talent level? I think maybe it's still to be determined for that one. Certainly a bona fide stakes quality sprinter. Will the horse stretch out? Will the rest of the class catch up? I don't know. But it was worth taking a look at in that Lucathia, again, it was a nice win the other day at Del Mar in the Desi Arnaz. But, again, just looking at the record now overall, still a little bit up in the air. Abel Cedillo was on board there. And, again, that's the guy who came down from Northern California. And really over the past, 4 months or so, been making a little bit of a buzz down in Southern California. And he was on board for that one. Just have to mention a sad story from really the end of last week, just about a week ago. Unfortunately, in the morning, down in New York, over at Belmont Park, one of the exercise riders, exercise rider for Steve Asmussen, Juan Becerra, passed away. Had a medical incident while working out a horse, fell off the horse, was taken to the hospital, but unfortunately passed away. The New York racing community obviously has kind of mourned his passing. There was a moment of silence the other day at the track after one of the races where the jockey colony came out, and a lot of NYRA people and other backstretch people, and that was nice to see. It's a sad story, though. Survived by his wife, Karen, and three children. They live in Mexico. Said to be a really nice guy. So it's a sad story. 43 years old, again, passed away while working horses at Belmont Park. There is a GoFundMe page for him. If you go to GoFundMe and search his name, I'm sure you can come up with it. Again, unfortunate incident. You know, the sad part of horse racing, it's a dangerous sport. And the exercise rider did pass away, again, about a week, little over a week ago, down at Belmont. So again, just wanted to put that out there, and take a moment just to remember a guy who clearly put his life's work into the racetrack, and B, let you know there is a GoFundMe page out there if you'd like to participate there. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Dave Rodman will talk a couple of stakes down at Laurel, two-year-old stakes. So again, always fun to look towards the future with the two-year-olds at this time of year. We'll get some of his ideas on those races right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Come on.
I want sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Here in upstate New York, no one provides bettors with more wagering options than Capital OTB. Our network of ranch and easy bet locations stretches from the mid-Hudson Valley all the way to the Canadian border and west to central New York. So whether you need to place a bet, fund your Capital Bets account, or watch the next big race, all the action is just around the corner. A full list of our branch and easy bet locations can be found online at CapitalOTB.com. Capital OTB, the better and most convenient choice for wagering in upstate New York.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. As promised before the break, joined now by Dave Rodman from Laurel Park. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Seth. Beautiful day here at Laurel.
Oh, I was going to ask, what is the weather expected for this afternoon?
Yeah, it was a little chilly this morning, but probably, I guess, in the 40s today, lower 40s. Nice sunshine, fast track. Yeah.
And what's the turf situation down there?
We're done with the turf for the
okay.
season.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, we had a little cold rain spell, and they said, well, let's scrap it. And then it kind of warmed up a little bit, almost like we could run on it, but it's already been shut down for the season.
All right. I just wanted to check on that. I mentioned top of the show, and as I promoed this before the commercial break, a couple of nice little two-year-old stakes down there today, and I thought we'd get some ideas on those because this time of year it's always fun to take a look at the two-year-olds. Let's start with the James Lewis, $100,000 up for grabs for the two-year-olds going six furlongs. While we talk, I'm going to look at the Mark McDermott over at Presque Isle Downs. It's News Tome, I'm guessing, is the
news to me.
What News Tome? Okay,
yeah,
yeah, news to me, of course. All right, I do that all the time with these mashups.
Out of news to use.
Yeah, news to me. Okay, yeah. Very good.
News to use. Yeah.
So we're looking at the number five, News to Me, getting it done. Coming in for Mike Trombetta, but there's Tuggle comes in for Jeremiah Englehart and Bill Parcells. August on Sir Back in Black off the debut victory, although in a maiden claimer, but as a Maryland bred, was in for the waiver there. Nice workout coming in for Sir Back in Black. I debated pulling up the replay of that one, but I thought News to Me was a little bit interesting. What are your thoughts in the Lewis?
Well, there's a key scratch out of that race, and that is Tuggle. He's out.
Okay, all right.
That's the only scratch, I believe, in the two stakes that we'll discuss today. But certainly it is a key scratch because he was going to perhaps be the speed of the speed in the race. While you're looking at news to me, I happened to see that race that night at Presque Isle, the Matt McDermott on the synthetic. And I tell you, this colt really likes the synthetic, but he's back on the dirt. We broke his maiden, a PA bred against PA bred, August at Parks. He's a nice horse for Trombetta. I don't know how he's going to step up in company today, how he's going to handle the return to the dirt. We know that he can settle from off the pace a little bit. He did it on the synthetic, so that's a good thing, because in this race, even with Tuggle out, and the other race especially, Philly race, seem to be kind of like one-dimensional type speed horses. So there should be a little bit of a scramble on for superiority early in the race. And news to me certainly fits the closing bill here. And I still think he's going to have to step it up a little bit to win. But that's Marie Trombetta, fourth. It's Michael's wife. So that's an all in the family, you know. he's definitely going to get this one going.
What did you think of Sir Back in Black?
Well, when he broke his maiden, I thought this is going to be a strong race. I mean, a very strong race. Kept following winners out of that race. There have been five starters out of that race, Seth. No winner.
Oh.
Each and every one of them has disappointed. So I don't know what the deal is. He's come up with a decent buyer of 78. He got a really nice time form U.S. figure number as well, I know. I don't know what he got on the sheets or anything like that. But, whatever it is, the race is not working out. But he comes back with Lasix today. He did settle slightly off a good pace. He's come back with a bullet work. So maybe he's just the superior horse, and the others just aren't much behind him. I don't know what to make of that race. But if you're looking for a situation where you're looking to underscore that race was legit, it's not happening.
And Bernie's on Fire also comes out of a maiden debut victory and a maiden claimer, with the waiver being a Maryland bred. That was an off-the-turf event, though, but goes out for the high-percentage Claudio Gonzalez.
And that was a pretty big field, a field of 12, and he settled in nicely off a very quick pace and made a big, big monster move to win going away. I think he's a legitimate Maryland bred here, and I think he's probably the horse to beat today now that Tuggle is out. Along with Raging Whiskey, Bourbon Courage colt, who's bred by Anchor and Hope Farm, and they're bringing him back to Maryland since he is Maryland bred. Anchor and Hope's Bourbon Courage, they stand Bourbon Courage. He's had 17 starters and 5 winners. He's one of the hot young first crop sires in the top 30 for the year, but certainly one of the top in Maryland. He and the other horse escapes me right now. They're head and head. Golden Lad are neck and neck. Some of the top sires, young first crop sires here in Maryland. Golden Lad had a couple of winners. Bourbon Courage stands at Anchor and Hope. So he raced in California. He won the Capote at Los Alamitos in 6.5 furlongs, a minute 15-3. Gate to wire fashion there, winning by 8. And since he was a Maryland bred, the connections decided to bring him back home to take advantage of some Maryland bred stakes, Maryland bred bonus, etc.
And just before we move on, we were speaking news to me, trained by Mike Trombetta. Did you get a chance to see the Nashua in Independence Hall? He has a very nice 2-year-old already in his barn.
Yes, he does. That was an impressive powering, motoring type move by Independence Hall. And he looks like it. I mean, Mike Trombetta, no stranger. You remember, I believe he had the favorite in the Derby a few years back, right?
Yeah.
So we're happy that the Bear Hill Maryland connection, Laurel connection, going on to big things and hopefully make some waves next year as a 3-year-old. We had a Kelly Rubley this year with Always Mining, didn't quite work out, but the way the Maryland horses are going this year, looks like our breakthrough day is coming true.
All right, let's move on to the 2-year-old fillies. They go in the Smart Halo, race number 7 this afternoon. $100,000, 6 furlongs the trip. While we talk, I'm going to pull up the maiden special weight run from number 4, Summer Fortune. Number 4 in this replay, Summer Fortune this afternoon. It's going to be number 6. Again, it's Jeremiah Engel. Is this one is going as far as we know, right?
Jeremiah? Yeah, but no scratches out of that race that I have at this time. Jeremiah Engelhardt, Violence Philly, Engelhard, very strong with second start two-year-old, 20% winners, positive ROI. Oliver Siblings, strong on the dirt. They've run 80-type buyer figures, a couple of the siblings of Summer Fortune. Again, a gate-to-wire win. We don't know what to make of it. She did beat a Orsay, well-thought-of American Pharoah filly that day. Beat her pretty soundly, too. Beat her by 5 or 6 lengths. Orsay ran third in that in the video you're showing now. She's won Summer Fortune of many fillies in this race that are lightly raised, of course, untested, and have a lot of early speed. There's speed from Ilchester Cheetah on the outside. Seems to be a one-dimensional type. Cruise and Dance added LASIK last time out. Both of those trained by Jeremiah O'Dwyer. Running two in here, Ilchester Cheetah and Jeremiah O'Dwyer's Cruise and Dance for Haymarket Farm. So I'm looking for someone from off the pace. Of course, you've got to think about Let's Stay Positive with early speed. First time in Michelle Lovell. She seems one-dimensional as well. I mean, Lucky Trinity, Claudio's in a good spot here. In both stakes races, Claudio Gonzalez, who's been on a roll here the last couple of weeks, he's unleashed some powerful, powerful two-year-olds here in Maryland that are going to bear some watching, and this is one of them. El Padrino filly, Lucky Trinity for Eurostable, made a surging wide move. You just don't see young horses like that make that kind of move in their maiden score to win going away. Big, powerful filly, too. Looked great in the track. Lucky Trinity today. Going to be my pick in the Warriors Reward Smart Halo at 6 furlongs.
And
a lot. Yep.
I should mention, I just kind of glossed over it before, but it's a little bit different in the PPs. Folks might not be familiar with those. Lucky Trinity and the two horses in the previous race we talked about come out of maiden claimers, but the W signifies a waiver. Down there, right. Maryland breds get a little bit of an advantage. They can drop into a maiden claimer, but they're not in for the claiming price. So you have to kind of, when you're handicapping, kind of take that into account, certainly.
Right. Maryland breds can enter the maiden claiming race, and then, of course, they're not eligible for the claim under the waiver claim rule that's currently in place. So, you know, Claudia looks in good spots in both stakes. Another horse, the filly I like a little bit, Seth, kind of, on the bubble here, don't know what to make of her, is Still Alive. It was super impressive and made the special as part of an entry at Parks. They threw her on the turf, and she was well-received at the windows that day, 70 cents to a dollar in second start, and she ran okay. She just didn't seem to really grab the ground on the grass, and then they put her back on the dirt. She didn't do much at Monmouth there, beating 20 lengths. In the Hollywood Wildcat, and then came back to redeem herself in the slop at Park. Then on the fast track, beaten favorite again as part of an entry there, Project Whiskey, in the Park's Juvenile. So she can handle, I think she's a little bit better on the dirt and perhaps can sit off the speed. It looks to me like she can rate a little bit if necessary, especially because she chased a pretty good pace on that Laurel Turf when she tried it back there in the second start. Midshipman filly. Who's a 10-1 on the line. I'm going to use her at least underneath today, Still Alive.
And you mentioned Let's Stay Positive. That one's just interesting because it comes off a claim. And I wonder, you know, claim from Wesley Ward, I wonder, always in those situations, will they be kicking themselves that they let this one go? And did they think, hey, maybe we can sneak this one by at 75,000? But came out of a maiden breaker in April at Keeneland, dropped in for a $75,000 tag at Keeneland last time in October and only the second career start. And it was a pretty good second with a number, a buyer number, that stacks up with this bunch. So, again, that might turn out to be a crafty claim. That one will be fun to watch today.
Yeah. Well, she was second to Complexifier. We got a good number in winning that race. Michelle Lovell, first off, the claim was 11%. And so it looks like she's really, really – she had maybe an outside draw. I might like her a little bit better. But, you know, she's got no option but except the gun on the inside unless they've really changed this filly around. They're going to make her a closer. I mean, she's going to be the pacer, part of the pace down on the inside. She's going to have to work very, very hard. Now, having said that, the rail yesterday here at Laurel I thought was pretty good, a little positive. It wasn't a strong rail bias, but it was you know, if you were on the rail, you get a couple extra extra bonus points there, a little help there on the inside. But, again, since she's inside and she's got several speed horses to her outside, like Cruising Band, like Summer Fortune, like Ilchester Cheetah, I mean, you can see a 3 or 4 way scramble up.
Again, a couple of nice 2-year-old races on the card today that will be fun to watch with an eye to the future, perhaps. But you kind of mentioned Maryland or Mid-Atlantic-based folks making the national scene maybe next year on the Derby Trail with some nice 2-year-olds. But I want to go back a couple of weeks as a Laurel Stakes winner. Made some noise at the Breeders' Cup. We're going to watch the stretch run here of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. It'll be number 11 sharing for Graham Motion. Coming out of a win at Laurel in the Salima back on September 21st. Was there some buzz at Laurel as sharing got it done in the Breeders' Cup?
Absolutely. Absolutely. A couple of us in the press box had her pretty good. I thought her win in the Salima was good, but she really stepped it up in the Breeders' Cup. And that's positive news for not only the Salima but the Laurel Futurity. You remember those were always solid races on the stakes schedule. Then they kind of went into a bit of a decline a few years back, and our racing secretary, Chris Merz, doing some changes, making them route races again, going long. And this is a positive step at perhaps getting that race graded. I would hope it would be, wouldn't you, after that score? And of course, the Laurel Futurity as well. They both run the same day. So that's a positive. We're happy for Graham. And, sharing is a big, big effort, putting Maryland on the map again, and the Sagamore Farm, too.
I'm happy if some of you guys had a piece of that down in the press box. $29.60.
I said some of us, not all of us.
I know exactly how that works. Just before we let you go, speaking of the Triple Crown, it was announced the other day. Nice little series of races that are they've named now as winners, win in your ins for the Preakness that I think will help make that field kind of intriguing next year.
Yeah, a lot of the win today and come back in May. So we have to be careful with copyrights here. We can't. That's going to spice up our stake schedule in the spring for sure. So a lot of positives. It's too bad we're not still on the grass, but this course is so good this year. They made some changes in how they treat the grass here, and I think it's that the roots are going to really, really take in over from next spring, and we're going to be on it a lot longer than you think in 2020. So we're looking forward to some positive grass racing here at Laurel. But the good news is that our weather streak's continuing, a fast track. We had a couple of days when the sun yesterday was pretty dark for the last race, but and some cloudy days, but fast track, and we're keeping Mother Nature's winter at bay for the moment.
Yeah, that's what we're all keeping our fingers crossed for. Up here in the Northeast, it has been winter-like. I think that's going to break on Monday, however, and hopefully we get a little moderation before the real winter starts. But again, plenty of good racing, including the 2 2-year-old stakes today. Dave, appreciate the visit, as always.
A great card here today, Seth, really. I mentioned Claudio in the 2 stakes. He's poised to have a pretty good day. He's got one in the opener there called Olive's Bumpa. Another Bourbon Courage runner, I think, and I'm going to use her to kick off the day. Maybe some of your listeners can maybe sweeten it up with a double or keying the horse in the early pick five and getting some money to play the stakes later.
Sounds good. Always appreciate some other ideas. Dave, again, appreciate the visit. We'll talk again.
Okay. See you, Seth.
Dave Rodman from Laurel Park. Again, a couple of nice stakes, and Dave talking about the Claudio runner in the opener as well. I mentioned, and I just pulled up the press release because I had it for the news and notes segment. It is win today, see you in May, stakes qualifiers. And it's not just the Preakness Stakes. It's actually the Preakness Weekend Stakes. There'll be races from Charlestown, Laurel, Golden Gate, Gulfstream, Oaklawn that will play into things like the Golden Gate San Francisco Mile will be an automatic qualifier for the Dixie Stakes. It's that kind of thing. But they were announced earlier this week, that series of races should be fun and hopefully help to juice up what is always a nice card anyway, make it even better. Preakness Day card, Preakness Weekend with Black Eyed Susan and Preakness Friday and Saturday down there at Pimlico. All right, I'm going to find my promos because there are a couple to announce today and tomorrow. Today is a fan appreciation day. That's the Catskill Lanes Easy Bet location down in Catskill. That goes from 1 until 5. First 25 folks through the door get a bet voucher, giveaway item, and a racing program. There'll also be a contest for everybody if they want to participate. And that gives us our chance to say thank you to you for your patronage on these fan appreciation days. Today, it's 1 to 5 at the Catskill Lanes Easy Bet. That's this afternoon. Also, throughout the weekend, 3% bonus on Churchill Downs wagers with your Capital OTB bet account. You have to be a member of the Player Rewards Program. There are some restrictions. Check out the website for more information on your 3% bonus Churchill Downs wagers today and tomorrow. Tomorrow is a football Sunday here at the Clubhouse Racebook. See all the racing action and all the football action here at the Clubhouse Racebook throughout the NFL football season. Wear a jersey and get in for free. Put your name on a square, maybe a winner jersey or a food voucher. It's always a lot of fun here at the Clubhouse Racebook. NFL Sundays, 7-Eleven Central Avenue in Albany. All right, it's a noon post time at Aqueduct. So as I look at my other screen up above me, I can see Anthony and the Big A. Anthony Stabile back in, and Andy and Anthony, the two ways, have started talking horses. So I'll wrap things up and get you into that. I'll be back in a little less than an hour with OTB Live for a Saturday afternoon. As always, appreciate your tuning in this morning to Racing Across America. Stay tuned. Be back in about an hour. We'll see you then.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.